We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
It's on to the MAC tournament for BGSU men's basketball as the number 2 seed, and the BG hockey team moves into the WCHA semifinals. We'll get to all of that on this edition of the Ziggy Cast.
This is the BGSU Ziggy Cast from Learfield, your home for Falcons updates, interviews, previews, and highlights. Now, here is your host, Todd Walker.
Thanks for being with us on another edition of the Ziggy Cast. The Mid-American Conference basketball tournament tips off on Thursday. Bowling Green will be there as the number 2 seed. Meanwhile, BGSU hockey, after a sweep of Alaska, will be at Bemidji for a best of 3 beginning on Friday. We'll welcome Ryan Vallon in to talk about that later on. Time now to get Kirk Cowan with us on the Ziggy Cast. My broadcast partner, looking forward to round 3 with Toledo in the MAC tournament this time around, Thursday night at 6:30. KC, thanks for checking in.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Well, they always say it's hard to beat somebody 3 times. I guess that's going to be tested yet again. And what's your feeling on playing somebody 3 times? Big deal? Not a big deal? What?
Well, it's a big deal. It's a definite big deal, especially depending on the opponent. And, you know, it's BGUT, so it's even a bigger deal than the average. It's hard to beat a decent team 3 times in a season. And, you know, Toledo coming into this game, they're going to be a little bit more fired up, being that they've already dropped 2 to the Falcons this year, looking to get a win, and a crucial win in MAC tournament play.
Yeah, and Bowling Green, I felt, controlled both games, although the scores were relatively close. As you look at this matchup with Toledo and basing it on the 2 games that were played, what do you like about the matchup?
Well, just, you know, Toledo, their depth, it's something that they're not a very deep team. So if we're playing and playing our guys the way we should, that gives us a definite advantage. You know, they're one of the few teams, and I shouldn't say, but they're not overly big at the guard position, so that's not going to be a problem for us. So, you know, it's just a team, I think, that if we play solid and smart basketball, we should be able to handle them for a 3rd time this year.
All right, let's flip it around then with a matchup with Toledo. What do you not like?
You know, controlling their guards. They have probably one of the most dynamic guards in conference. He's a guy that if he gets going, he can drop, you know, 30 points on you. And, you know, he's that type of guard that if he gets going and you have to help too much, he knows to make the right basketball play and get the basketball to his teammates that could possibly do damage as well. But, you know, we just, like I said, it all comes back to us being focused, us being ready. It's at a neutral site, so no real advantage for anyone home crowd-wise or fan base-wise. So, you know, it's just going to be coming out, playing basketball, being smart on the court with the basketball and not having silly turnovers.
Well, the conventional wisdom is, of course, you want to be playing your best ball at the end of the season. And I think if we had talked about Bowling Green with three games to go, we thought maybe they were peaking, but they lost their last three games. So now it feels like they're certainly sliding and the tournament is a whole new season. But from what you've seen lately, what's bothered you the most?
Defensively. We have not been locked in defensively like we should be or like we've been throughout the season. That's something that's bothered me. And then also, you know, on the flip side, and our offense is not where it was a few games ago. We have guys that just aren't really giving us much right now. But, you know, but to me, it's going to be at the defensive end, and it's something that we're going to have to concentrate on these next couple of days before practice. So when we go into this this game, we're prepared defensively.
And you talk about playing in the big arena, the neutral arena, and it's normally seen when you go to a NBA arena for these conference tournaments that the shooting percentage, especially from three, tends to be lower. And I think it becomes more important to get good shots, not settle for a bunch of threes. And Bowling Green offensively sometimes tends to take bad shots, and that feeds the beast with Toledo, in this case, being able to run. I think shot selection and smart offense is going to be paramount for Bowling Green. What about you?
I agree, Todd. And like you said, playing in an abnormal arena, you know, for by college standards, you have the depth perception with the location of the basket. You have the addition of having that NBA three-point line. Sometimes I'm not sure if it stays in MAC conference, but that some teams, some conferences keep on the floor, that you have guys that feel the need to show that they have NBA range. So, you know, so you put that all together, you just have to be smart. You have to be aware where you are on the court, who's on the court with you, who's taking the shots at the appropriate time. And just if you're taking shots and they're not making shots, you have to often hit the offensive boards. But also at the same time, we have to be aware that someone has to get back on defense. We saw that a couple of times against Kent State at Buffalo at home, where we took shots and everyone stood and watched, assuming that the shot was going to go in. Buffalo did a great job of leaking out and was able to get a few fast break points. So just, you know, I know it's a lot, but these guys, we have no more freshmen. You know, everyone should be seasoned in college play, and we just have to be aware of that, all that stuff going on while playing.
Well, the other thing is, I got to believe that Dylan Fry is going to start this game and return to his more accustomed role before he left the team, that is, logging 32 to 35 minutes instead of 20 to 25 minutes. I just think it's time that happens, and it's clear that the team needs him out there more minutes than with Davin Ziegler. It just changes the whole dynamic. Plus, the experience of playing in the tournament, I think, begs the fact that he's got to play more now.
Yeah, I agree, and it's something that we spoke about after the Buffalo game at home. It's one of those things where you're right. If we are going to accept and welcome Dylan Fry back to the team, which we have done, we have to put our best chance of winning out on the floor. And I think, like you, Dylan has probably given us our best opportunity to win. You know, the ability to create, the ability to knock down shots is something that's going to be needed. And again, it just allows Justin Turner the freedom to not be double team or sometimes triple team like teams have done when he's out there with a Caleb Fields and a Devin Ziegler, you know, because they're just not showing those guys as much respect at the offensive end.
And the other thing in the matchup with Toledo, of course, trying to corral Marion Jackson is always a challenge, but Bowling Green has struggled to handle Luke Kanapke as well. But it does seem that when they've had Matisse in there, he's played better against him than, say, Taylor Matos, or maybe Marlon Sierra has been able to handle him a little better. I think you have to go with the better matchup a lot quicker than you would in the regular season, right?
I agree. And nothing against Taylor. It's just one of those things that lateral quickness, he's just not there yet. The ability to try to show on Marion Jackson coming off that screen and then getting back to Kanapke, who is just popping back and shooting that three-point shot. It's just something right now that he's struggling with. But like you said, Matisse has done a really good job of it. And I think Marlon has done a decent job of it also. Matisse has that length and quickness that he's able to show, get back and contest that three-point shot by Kanapke. Or if he's trying to put it on the floor and get by you, he has the ability to stay in front of him and make it a difficult shot. So nothing against Taylor, but like you, I would look to see Matisse or Marlon in the game a little sooner than normal.
Well, the other part about the MAC tournament, of course, is Bowling Green earned a bye as the number two seed. So they played on Friday and will not have another game before that. Toledo had to play on Monday, and there's the whole rest versus rust argument. But I guess in the long run, especially when you look at Toledo with their short bench, I think it's even more advantageous for Bowling Green to have had the bye and Toledo to have had played on Monday.
Yeah, I agree. And especially with the way that we ended the season, this gives us an opportunity to reset, to gain our focus back, to go over, look at the last three games. What have we been doing right? What have we been doing wrong? To get that taste out of our mouth. And like I said, to reset and get ready for this tournament game. And then, like you said, Toledo with the short bench, they played Monday. They won't play again until Thursday. So, I wouldn't think that that's going to be much of a problem for their legs, but the mere fact that they had an additional game that we didn't have to play, that should give us a slight advantage leg wise.
All right, KC, before I let you go, let me get a little bit of a prognostication from you. That guys like Justin Turner or Dylan Fry or Daquan Plowden are likely to have big games at any given time because of their role on the team and their past performance. But who is somebody on this Bowling Green team you feel like is ready to break out, whether it's just this Toledo matchup or it's just time for them to maybe step up? Who do you have a feeling about that could be a key here, an X factor?
Well, the X factor to me, you just mentioned his name, but he hasn't really been involved in everything that we've got going on. Dylan Fry, I think the X factor for us is going to be Dylan Fry. It's just going to be a matter, like you said before, is he going to get back to playing Dylan Fry minutes? Is he going to be as offensive minded as he was early on in the season to help Justin Turner? So to me, he's like the X factor one. But again, in this matchup, at least for Toledo, with the way that the team, the games have gone, probably Matisse is probably going to be, we're going to need another big game from him, which we got two big games from him in both the matchup at UT and the matchup at home. So probably Matisse in this matchup alone, but in order for us to have a long run in the tournament, that number one X factor has got to be Dylan Fry.
All right, KC, hopefully the Falcons can extricate themselves from this funk that has them entering the tournament on a three-game losing streak. We will see you in Cleveland Thursday night.
Yes, sir.
We'll talk Rocket basketball now. Toledo appears to be playing their best ball of the season, and round three with Bowling Green is coming up Thursday night in the MAC tournament this time around. We check in now with the voice of the Rockets, Brent Balbinot. Brent, how are you?
Well, all things considered, not bad. I never thought I'd say this to my wife. It's a phrase I never thought I'd say, period. But before Monday, I looked at her and said, I hope we get to go to Cleveland. And boom, we'll see you at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse in a couple days.
Yeah, the Rockets held off Western Michigan Monday night 76-73 to earn the berth to the quarterfinals where they will play Bowling Green. That game looked like Toledo sort of had it in hand and then maybe let Western come back in it. Take me through the win over Western.
That game, and I only say this somewhat tongue-in-cheek in talking with a couple of the assistants afterwards, it was almost like four games in one. Toledo jumped out to a great start, got up by as many as 16 points in the first half. Then starting center Luke Kanapke picked up his second foul with about 9.5 minutes left to go. And I remember looking over at my color announcer, Jay Lehman, who used to play for Toledo. As a matter of fact, we only somewhat tongue-in-cheek give him a ribbon because he's a member of the last Toledo team to make the NCAA tournament back in 1980. Yeah. So, long drought. But I said, how long can you leave him on the bench? I said, are we looking at the rest of the half? And Jay goes, there's no way you can leave him on the bench for over 9 minutes. Luke Maranka comes in, and for about 7 minutes, really played the best ball that we've seen of him. He stuck his nose in, got physical. He's outmanned, or at least outweighted, by about 30 pounds with Johnson. Got to the line, hit 3 out of 4. But then Western Michigan realized we've got a size advantage. And instead of jacking up quick threes and shooting themselves out of several possessions, they started posting their bigs up, both Johnson and Wright, and they went to work. And with about 2 minutes left to go, all of a sudden the 16-point lead is down to 4. And Luke comes in. Marion Jackson drains a huge 3 right before the half. And you're feeling a little bit better with a 7-point lead. Same thing again. Lather, rinse, repeat. Rockets jump out to a big second-half lead, 16 points. And Michael Flowers is just – he's not just a shooter. He's a scorer. But they guarded him about as well as I think you could possibly hope. But when guys like that get hot – they can change the complexion of a game. And he went out in a blaze of glory with 35 points, but he darn near, I've never seen a single player beat a team before. He darn near did it Monday night. But fortunately, between Western Michigan and Toledo, the Broncos had 2 scores in Flowers and Johnson. Toledo had 3, and they needed every bit of it because at the end of the night, it was a white-knuckle ride. And when you look up at a 3-point win, a one-possession win, you can say everybody that made a contribution certainly was needed.
Yeah, it was the firm of Jackson, Kanapke, and Jackson in that game. Marion with 25, Willie Jackson 22, Luke Kanapke 18. And, you know, one thing that certainly doesn't appear to have changed with Toledo since Bowling Green saw them in their last matchup is that they're still playing basically 6 guys. It's still basically the starting 5 and a few guys pitch in here and there, but outside of the starting 5, they're not getting much.
Well, and we've talked about this before. The contributions, when you look at the 8-man rotation that Coach Kowalczyk has gone to this year, you got 3 freshmen coming off the bench. And so contributions aren't going to be, you know, 10-8 or heck, even, you know, 6-4. What it's going to be is if you can get a basket or two here from each one of them, a rebound or two here from each one of them. And then as an aggregate, you're looking at really a true bench production instead of just one guy and a few others filling in for some minutes here. They got 6 points off the bench last night. And again, in a 3-point win, everybody made a contribution. Maranka was 3 for 4 from the line. Dylan Alderson hit a 3. He was a little bit more aggressive. But there's no secret about this, Todd. I mean, nothing has changed. So for any fans that are going to sit here at this point in time, I mean, we're at the end of the season. We're now a round into the postseason tournament to say, well, so-and-so's got to be contributing off the bench. Hey, open your eyes. Look at what you're seeing because teams are what they are right now. And this team for the Rockets is going to go as far as that core four where their starters take them. And if you can get just a small amount of contributions, if you don't have a negative in front of your minutes or your production in the box score at the end of it, then you've done the job. But we know who they are. They're not going to be anybody different when these two teams tip off on Thursday. It's just a matter of can everybody hit and produce that needs to.
With that said, since Bowling Green and Toledo met, the Rockets have certainly, I don't want to say turned their season around, but to a degree they have, as they've won the vast majority of their games. What are they doing better in the meantime?
In this case, again, it's easy to look at that core four and look at Marion Jackson, what he's done. Look at Willie Jackson, again, picked up another double-double last night. It's still early as we're recording this, but I believe that was 17 on the season for him. He was just an absolute beast. Konapke has been a little bit more aggressive as well, but defensively, I think is where they've made at least a modest improvement. Now, again, it's easy to look at Flowers go off for 30-plus last night, but he's an elite scorer. But the key was, don't let somebody else beat you. And earlier in the year, as a matter of fact, the first two times, just use Western Michigan as an example, Toledo had shut Flowers down. I mean, in that first matchup at Savage Arena, I think that got in his head. He looked like he kind of downshifted a little bit. He was frustrated. In the second matchup up at the Zoo a few weeks ago, Spencer Littleson just got into his jersey. He only scored 7 points. But on both of those nights, a third or a fourth player stepped up and had big nights. In a couple of occasions, I think it was Cruz, had a career day with 21 points. That hasn't been happening. So if you're going to ride one horse, if you're an opponent, then Toledo's fine with that. You go ahead and get yours, but we're not going to let somebody else beat us that wasn't in the scout. And I think that's made a big difference.
Well, Brent, as you look at this matchup then, there's not a whole lot of mystery. These teams played twice, and it was relatively close throughout both games. Bowling Green won both games. What's Toledo talking about they need to do a little better or have change if they're going to get the outcome they want?
Well, now, I'm being completely honest with you, and this isn't coach speak or being PC here, but they were focused only on Western Michigan as of Monday morning. Now that they know that they're through, obviously the scouts out, like you said, no team, or these two teams, no strangers to each other. But I don't want to say licking their chops because that'll be bulletin board material, but they know what it is. Obviously the Falcons roster knows what it is, except this time it's one and done. You're playing for the right to put the jersey on one more time. I think certainly what you need to see, and I'm looking at the box score for that matter in the last matchup down at the Stro, the stats were pretty even with just a couple of exceptions. And Toledo didn't turn it over a ton, just 10 turnovers in that game. But what Bowling Green did was turn it into double-digit points. You take a look at one guy going off, and Kuchlikovas, I don't know, does he just have does he have something going for Toledo? Because he seems to pull out some of his best plays, some of his playground plays, and I'm talking about banking in 23-footers. He's been an interesting cat to watch. But when you take a look at strength on strength, matchup versus matchup, you're looking at a really even ball game here, except for bench production. And I know, I think when we did our last podcast, you called Bowling Green chameleons. You know, they can be whatever they need to on any given night because they didn't really have a true identity. They were winning in multiple ways. So I'll be curious to see. I'll turn around and ask you that question. Is this still the same team? Because Toledo is, from the last time they played. It's just a matter of execution. Is BG a different team going into this one?
Well, I think they're still the same. It's just a lot of times it's about their focus and intensity that tends to wane and go one way or the other. But I think they still have a number of players off the bench that can, in any given game, give you big production or just be a place filler. And that has continued. I guess the interesting part of that will be to see whether Dylan Fry is in the starting lineup as he was for the final game on senior night, but he has not been starting since he came back to the team. And I guess we'll find out if that's back to him starting or not when they tip things off Saturday night, or I should say Thursday night, at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse.
You're putting yourself in the championship game already, are you?
I'm not used to saying Thursday, that's for sure. It's either Tuesday or Saturday. So the tournament screws up everybody's internal clock, that is for sure. And I guess we're looking forward to a third round with Bowling Green and Toledo. And for the Rockets, I'm sure the idea of redemption is there since BG swept the regular season, and you would expect anybody to be able to focus on that. Certainly also a chance for Toledo to salvage their season. They had very much high expectations that really weren't met during the regular season, right?
Exactly. And part of that, too, if it were underachievement, then you could say you're disappointed. But, you know, again, Coach Kowalczyk has mentioned this multiple times. You know, A.J. Adu was going to be a starter this year. Mattia Okunzo, once he kind of got his feet underneath him, was expected to work his way into the starting lineup easily. And I'm just kind of ballparking it here, but I think I'm safe to say if you extrapolate out minutes from what Adu did last year to starters' minutes this year and what Akunzo could give as a solid supplemental player, you're talking about probably 15 to 20 points and probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 to 10 rebounds that's just sitting on the bench all season long. And as kind of circling back to what we talked about to start here, they are what they are. And this team is going to go as far as the starters take them. But let's be honest, too, you cannot underestimate senior leadership. Willie Jackson and Luke Knapp, you know, this is the last go-around. And while people sometimes kind of look at things in a vacuum, well, are they, you know, do they want to get payback against their arch rivals? Of course they do. But you know what they want to do just as much, if not more? That's win. Get to the semifinals. Get to the finals. They were a preseason pick to win the West and make a deep run. You can do both. I think we're so locked into being singularly focused, at least as fans. Hey, this game can have multiple meanings and multiple satisfactions for the team that wins. But it's a situation, again, where, as you mentioned, Bowling Green is clearly deeper. They've got more production off the bench, potentially. And Toledo cannot afford to have even one of their starters to have an off night in this situation. Because, as we've seen, with only a couple of exceptions, they just don't have the depth to make that up. So it'll be interesting to see, because I know Toledo's been a little bit more physical lately as well, especially defensively. They've crashed the boards a little bit better, and I'm talking about more than just Willie Jackson. You're seeing Marion drop down. As a point guard, he's averaging almost 6 boards a game in, what, 5 of his last 7 contests. Guys are having to do it by maybe taking just a little bit of a broader step into areas of production that they otherwise wouldn't have been needed to. So I think it's going to be a great game. I don't think otherwise. Look, let's be honest, too, Todd. This is the conference's dream matchup. Short of Toledo and Bowling Green facing each other in the championship,
yeah,
especially for a Thursday night, a quarterfinal game. I don't know about BG, but I'm assuming there's going to be a big fan turnout. Toledo is already talking about going ahead and snatching up tickets. I mean, this promises to be really, really fun.
Yeah, I think for the Mid-American Conference, it certainly fits the bill to put butts in seats on a Thursday night quarterfinal game, but normally it'd be mostly empty. So we'll see how it turns out. Brent Balbinot is the voice of the Rockets. We appreciate you joining us, and we'll see you in Cleveland.
All right, we'll see you then.
We'll move on now to the other games of the MAC tournament, beginning with the first game on Thursday at noon. Top-seeded Akron will meet 8th-seeded Ohio. Time now to visit with the voice of the Zips, Steve French. Akron, of course, last lost at Bowling Green, but after that they went on to win at Buffalo and at home over Ohio and Kent State to secure the MAC championship. So I guess if there's a such thing as momentum, Steve, the Zips would have it.
Sure, as much as you can in the Mid-American Conference. I would have said Buffalo had momentum, too, until Monday night, you know. So I don't know what that counts for, but actually the Zips lost 2 games mid-season, both in the final second to Buffalo and Kent, and after that they went 8-1. As you noted, that one loss was at Bowling Green, and then the Zips somehow after that ended up winning the league by 2 games. So it's always good to be king, but as you know, when it comes to the MAC tournament, that really doesn't mean a hill of beans when you get right down to it.
No, I think the most impressive win that Akron had after the BG game, for many reasons, was their home game against Ohio, because it was a sort of a game where you could see a letdown, and maybe they did. They lost Lauren Christian Jackson in the second half, relatively a long time to go in the game, to foul trouble, yet after falling behind, they came back to beat Ohio. Talk about that game in particular and how the team was able to bounce back.
Sure. Yes, Ohio played great in the first half. Some of it may have been Akron's defense. I don't know. Jason Preston is kind of just playing out of his mind right now, or maybe that's just the way he's going to be for the next 2 years. And Ohio led it 50-37 at halftime. Most points Akron gave up in a half all year. Didn't really get a whole lot closer in the second half. Then Lauren fouled out with 8 minutes to go. I find I remember exactly 8:24 to go in the game. He fouled out. But the Zips then defensively finally locked it down, held Ohio to 17 points in the second half. They lost Vanderplas with a sprained ankle, but he came back in. and the Zips completed that comeback. And interestingly, with BG losing that night, that clinched at least a share of the MAC title. And so Akron elected to cut down the nets that night again in the Ohio game as at least a co-champion.
Yeah.
And, of course, now here we are playing the Bobcats again just 9 days later.
Yeah, Akron then held off their rivals, Kent State, to wrap up the regular season. And now you're right, quick turnaround again against Ohio. Bobcats won handily at home on Monday night. So they're feeling pretty good about things after getting a win over Central Michigan. And the first time the Zips and Bobcats played, it was a close matchup as well down in Athens with the Zips eking out a two-point win. So seems like the matchup makes for pretty good basketball as far as competitive games. Is that how you see it going again?
Oh, yeah. I don't have any doubt about that. I mean, the MAC tournament is eight teams, and you can make a case for any one of those eight to play well enough in three games to win the tournament. I don't think Akron has any sort of advantage being in the one versus eight game. You know, actually the games with Ohio down in Athens, the Zips led up by 14 and played a great first half. And then I think the Bobcats shot 64% in the second half. They got within two at the end. It's been very unusual games that really haven't been close for large chunks but have ended up that way. But I think Jeff Bowles, who is a former Zips assistant, of course, former Ohio State assistant, and he's from Northeast Ohio originally, his first year with the Bobcats, has done a great job. And, you know, he's got a lot of people that have never played at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse before. But then, you know, the Zips have a lot of guys haven't been there very often either. So I would anticipate a close game. I would anticipate most of the seven games of this tournament to be pretty good basketball games.
Steve, before I let you go, at least from the outside, there doesn't appear to be a whole lot to be concerned about with Akron. Seems like they're playing well at the end of the season. As far as we know, they are healthy. There's no apparent problems. As you look at it, this thing is set up for them to make a nice run here. Any concerns in your mind?
I mean, just the thing that, I mean, let's face it, Akron, early in the year, in the MAC year, blew everybody out. Then they lost some close games. Then they had a bunch of close games. I think the consistency defensively would be a bit of a concern. They've kind of turned that on and off. And when you're a team that shoots a lot of three-pointers, and Todd, you saw this, you know, we're shooting at a different place. We're playing three games in a row, possibly. How's that shooting going to hold up? You saw at Bowling Green what it's like when you don't make a three-pointer. The Zips were 5-for-35 that night, and that is really a lot of their game is predicated on the three-point shot. So it could be a thing of beauty. It can also be a concern. But again, they're basically playing eight guys, and you're playing three games potentially in 3 days is a concern. But everyone's got their issues going into this. And being the number one seed, I feel pretty good about it.
Steve French is the voice of the Zips. They are the top seed. They'll play Ohio at noon on Thursday to begin the quarterfinals in Cleveland in the MAC tournament. Steve, appreciate your time. We'll see you in Cleveland.
All right, Todd. See you then.
Let's turn our attention now to Akron's opponent noon Thursday, the Ohio Bobcats. They come in after beating Central Michigan by a count of 85-65 on Monday night. And the Bobcats are playing some pretty good ball of late. And here to talk about it with us is the voice of the Bobcats, Russ Eisenstein. And, well, you look up, and the Bobcats have finished with a record of 17-15, a couple of nice wins down the stretch. In fact, won 4 out of 5 after they let one get away in Bowling Green. So fair to say the Bobcats are playing their best ball of the season.
Without a doubt, Todd, this is a team that has really hit its stride, and they are playing their best basketball at the end of the year now. Ohio's 7-3 in its last 10, and two of those three losses, Ohio had double-digit leads that they lost at Akron and, as you mentioned, at Bowling Green. The other one was at Kent State. Ohio ran out of gas against Akron, and you saw what happened against Bowling Green. But past that, this is a team that is really starting to gel. They have that belief. They have, I think, the best point guard in the MAC and one of the best on the mid-major level and maybe beyond in Jason Preston. And everything is started to work around him. Ohio's had injury issues just like everybody else. Folks could say it's adversity. I just say it's part of a season. No season is a straight line, so Ohio is on the uptick at the right time. The line's going up, and Ohio has good reason to believe that they could beat Akron because Ohio led for a lot of the game at the Jar by double figures and only lost by two at the Convo. So it should be interesting on Thursday.
Yeah, the Bobcats win over Central Michigan on Monday. Really took care of business, winning by 20. Ben Vanderplas had 25 points in that game. And it seems that other than Preston, he's the guy that can consistently get you upper teens or a 20-point game. He's been pretty good, too.
Yeah, he had a double-double in the win over Central Michigan. He has range. The muscle that he added in the offseason is stuck throughout the year. As you know, the toll of a season on an 18- to 22-year-old body might be able to wear off some of that muscle a little bit. He's kept that pretty solid. And he missed the game against Miami with an ankle injury, so he missed the game prior to having the double-double. He said the ankle's fine. He's excited about playing. He thinks his team can make a run. His durability in the post, his ability to find others, too. He's a willing passer, but he's also willing to receive that pass. He can play through contact. He's patient. He's got a bit of an old-school game to him, and his free-throw shooting has been better now. He struggled with that at the start of the year. Last year, he was much better than he is this year in totality from the line, but he's really started to become a complete player. So you're right, the Bobcats have the inside-outside threat with a lot of other pieces, too.
And, of course, the wild card, so to speak, is Jordan Dartus, the senior three-point sharpshooter, just because of his physical condition. We saw it again at Bowling Green where he literally had to be carried off the court, but he's back playing. On Monday night, he had three threes. So if Dartus is able to go, even though he may be hindered a bit, he's such a threat that people have to respect him.
And he's the only player on this team that has experience playing in the Pro Palace in this state. Everybody else on this team is new and thus seasoned but didn't play up there. So you have to think about the fact that that veteran nature that he'll bring to the table is going to be leaned on here. That's a real thing. And hopefully Ohio can use that, his comfortability in this gym. Nobody's crying for Ohio, but it's been 3 years since Ohio's been there, and it seems like it's been a long time since Ohio was there and got to the semifinals with Saul Phillips back in the 16-17 season. So this team is going to rely on Jordy, who was there during that time, and Jeff Bowles has really, and his staff, have pieced the things together to allow this puzzle to come together for Ohio to break through to the quarters to see John Gross. And certainly John knows about a team and being dangerous from the first round, because when Ohio won in 2010, Ohio had to go on the road to beat Ball State, and then that magical green carpet ride with Armand Bassett and DJ Cooper and others to be able to win the first of two titles under his watch. So he knows full well, and it will be interesting to see John in the Zips on Thursday.
All right, Russ, you mentioned that the two meetings with Akron in the regular season were quite competitive. What was Ohio able to do, and what's maybe something they need to do differently to turn the tables this time?
Well, with the second-half rally at the Convo and a loss by two after being down by double digits at halftime, and then it was a double-digit halftime lead at Akron, and it was a second-half collapse, unfortunately, and Ohio ran out of gas in that game against the Zips because they were playing hurt. It was a game in which Ohio was without Jordan Dartus, and Ben Vanderplas got banged up in that game. He left mid of the second half, didn't play the rest of the way. They had some injuries throughout the course of the game. They played through. Sylvester Obanda went down. Lonnie McDay went down, too, in that game, and still Ohio had a chance to try to come back and win after giving up the lead in the second half. So this is a standard thing to say. Got to be consistent, because really, if Ohio ironed out their performance, both performances at home and at the Jar, they might have won one of those games. And so if you can find a couple of possessions where it's a little easier to get points and keep it consistent and not go on stuck on a number droughts, Ohio's got a real shot in this thing.
Russ Eisenstein is the voice of the Bobcats. They will take on top seed Akron noon on Thursday. Russ, appreciate your time.
You bet, Todd. Safe travels to you and the Falcon fans. Can't wait to see everybody in Cleveland.
Game number two on Thursday will feature Northern Illinois and the Miami Redhawks, who surprised Buffalo Monday night with a win at Alumni Arena. And here to talk about it is the voice of the Redhawks, Steve Baker. Bake, good to have you back with us.
Hey, thanks, Todd. I appreciate it, man.
Well, a win at Buffalo. Nike Sabandi goes off for 31, and that's not necessarily unprecedented. But what else keyed the upset at Buffalo Monday night?
I tell you what, we had some other guys step up and really play very good basketball. Isaiah Coleman-Lance had a great game, 13 points, I think, 8 rebounds, 6 assists for the guy that spent a lot of the ball game at the point, and putting Mekhi Leary at the 2. And guys just played off of each other and played some great basketball. And you know, aside from that, the biggest key in beating Buffalo, a team that's leading the country in rebounding, I mean, you got to keep them off the boards, and we did that. They didn't get as many offensive boards as they did 6 days earlier when they beat us by 6. And you know, Nike just had one of those nights. Played like Nike Sabandi is capable of. He was unstoppable in the first half, and then when you know, Devontae Jordan really started to D him up in the second, he didn't force anything. Let the offense come to him, and when it wasn't him, somebody else was stepping up and making a shot.
Yeah, that's interesting. They played at Buffalo twice in less than a week, and clearly that can wear on a team. What was the key to being able to make that quick turnaround and not be sort of wishing this was all over? I mean, mentally it had to be tough on them.
Well, I'm sure it was, especially after the loss against Ohio and the way that you know, came down. You're up by 10 with 3 minutes to go, and that lead goes away, and they wind up winning by 2, and you go back and watch the film, it's just clearly mistakes on your part. You know, Preston's a great ball player, but it was really nothing he did. It was just mistakes on Miami's part that cost you that game. And, you know, you really thought maybe the guys would come down with their head hanging down a little bit, but they didn't do that. Even, you know, even Buffalo started out with an 8-0 lead to start that basketball game and had, you know, another 8-point lead later on in the half, and actually led by 7 in the second half after Miami led by 10 at the half. And, you know, still kept their head up, kept fighting, kept going, and, you know, made the shots, made free throws down the stretch, made 3 straight 1-and-1s to kind of seal that deal. And, you know, the mark of this team down the stretch is they will fight. And, you know, they continued to do that. And last night, if you're going to have your first road win in conference play, it might as well be in the tournament.
Yeah, that is also remarkable. So now the Redhawks will face Northern Illinois, and that is a team that Miami played twice in a crossover. The teams split with the home teams winning each. What do you take away from the two matchups and how it pertains to Thursday night's matchup?
You know, both games were really good basketball games. Second half at Northern Illinois, Eugene German was going for his 2,000th point and becoming the all-time leading scorer at Northern, and he kind of took over that game in the second half. But at Miami, we didn't have Delonte. We didn't have Nike and either one of those guys at that basketball game, and still found a way to win. Defense is going to be a key. This team really has to defend. Eugene German's going to get his. I mean, he's going to find a way to get 20, 25 points. So you have to contain the rest of them, and you have to go to the glass. This is another team a lot like Buffalo that loves to live off the offensive rebound, and you got to find a body. You got to box out and you know, and shoot the ball. I mean, that was another key last night. Miami had its, it seems like, every game scoring drought early in that second half when Buffalo erased a 10-point lead, but, you know, came back, stayed with it, made their shots, and, you know, didn't fall in love with a 3. So I think all those are keys, and, you know, Miami just has to keep playing the way that they've been playing, and that's more as a team. Don't look to one individual, even though, you know, Nike had a great game last night. That'll happen within the flow of the game if you're playing like a team and working the ball and looking for the good shot.
Well, Steve, now the Redhawks are playing with the proverbial house money. I mean, as the 12 seed,
yep,
coming in there, they can be free and loose, and those kinds of teams are dangerous.
Yeah, they are. I mean, I saw it, you know, last week in a couple of tournaments, you know, that the 12 seed, the 11 seed, making some noise. And, you know, it's as you know, this conference, everything is tight. And, I mean, as you know, unfortunately for you guys, we saw 12 beat 1. not too long ago, if the tournament was going on then. So, yeah, you just got to go out there and play your basketball game. Have confidence in what you're doing. Know what you're doing. And, at that point, you get to Cleveland, and we've said it week in and week out, you get to Cleveland, anything's going to happen.
Steve Baker is the voice of the Redhawks. The Miami Redhawks, with an upset, move into the quarterfinals against Northern Illinois Thursday at 2:30. Bake, appreciate you taking a few minutes.
Hey, Todd, thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it.
Let's talk Northern Illinois basketball now with the voice of the Huskies, Bill Baker, and they are coming off a fine season. They were the MAC West champions and the number 4 seed, so I guess they were co-champs with Ball State, so they were the 4 seed. Ball State was the 3. Nonetheless, at one point this year, it wasn't looking that rosy, Bill Baker. About the time the Huskies lost at Bowling Green in a very close game, they turned their season around after that, didn't they?
Had a nice little stretch, Todd, that they kind of put the goal in this club, I think, more than anything else. It's been a goofy year, though. I mean, up and down the league, you've seen it. I know with Bowling Green, you had a terrific stretch, and then over the last 3 games, kind of stubbed your toe a little bit. I think that's indicative of almost anybody in this league so far this year. And yeah, I mean, we came out of the gate well after playing in Bowling Green. But, you know, the old saying is you always want to be playing your best basketball at the end of the season. And I'm hoping maybe we're going to rediscover that. Certainly didn't have it the other night in the regular season finale against Bowling Green. I beg your pardon, against Ball State.
Yeah, and the Cardinals took it to Northern 75-54 back last Friday in DeKalb, but they still earned a bye as the 4 seed. And when you talk about this ball or this Northern Illinois team, clearly you start with Eugene German. And I sense that this year he's been much more of a team-oriented player. In other words, it seems like the team flows better around him. He doesn't have to score 40 for them to be in games, although he certainly still can. Does this team just kind of fit better around him than they did last year, or does he fit better with them?
Well, you know, I'll take you back to last year, and I thought during the course of the regular season last year that he was really coming around, and you know, that the pieces were falling in place around what he can do. But then last year came the postseason, and if you remember, I know you remember, because we saw you guys in the semifinals. Northern had to win a couple of games. They had to win a couple of games on the road to ensure that they would get a home game in round number 1. And those 2 games had to be at Central, and they had to be down at Ball State. And those are 2. No place isn't difficult to play in, you know, in this league. But having to go on the road for those final 2 games was huge. Having to come home and host a game, anything can happen, as Buffalo found out the other night in their match against Miami. And then they got to Cleveland, beat Toledo, a club that had beaten them twice in the regular season, squared off against you guys, fell behind by 23, came back, took the lead late in the game, but still wound up losing. That last stretch of games, I think Eugene German really kind of took off. He took over the way he had back in his freshman year and back in his sophomore year. I think the team aspect, it didn't go out the window completely, but Gino was on a mission. Now, we came back into this year, and I think the cosmic team player that you want to have, and I think that stuck for the longest time, but slowly but surely now, towards the, maybe last half dozen games or so, I'm beginning to see that other Gino reemerge, and that's because, well, this is his swan song. I mean, his days are numbered in a Northern Illinois uniform. He knows this. A couple of other seniors know this. I think Gino's taken the so-called bull by the horns, and it's just going to try to rush away a victory any way he can. If it means scoring 27 or scoring 30 or better, then that's the way it's going to be.
I'll talk about this matchup then with Miami Tuesday at 2:30, Bill. The Redhawks and the Huskies played twice. They split. How do you feel this matchup works for NIU?
Well, you've got the revenge factor in there for NIU. That's one little thing. I mean, Northern, they played twice, as you said, and the Huskies won at home 70-55. Went down to Miami, and Miami's 2 top players weren't in the game for whichever reason. I'm not sure. We never did find out exactly why, but, Devontae Brown, of course, was one of them, and Nike Sabandi was the other guy. And yet, despite this, Miami won the thing. and it was 65-60. It's just the outcome you would not expect. So I think you've got that aspect going for NIU. I think you've got the experience factor working, I think, a little bit for the Huskies as well, simply because you were there last year, had a nice run into the semifinals. A lot of the people that were there are back again this year, so they've been on that stage. They've been in that building a little bit more than the Red Hawks, I think, have. So, but with that, you begin to look at personnel, and then again, you come up on there's Geno averaging 20-some points per ball game. But after that, the thing that worries me is, and it's been this way all season long, we've never developed that consistent second and even third double-digit scorer so far this season. I mean, next in line is Lacey James, who I think does a phenomenal job at 6'9 in the middle, but he's averaging 9 points and about 7-8 rebounds per contest. Then it falls off to Trenton Hankerson with 7-something and Darius Bean, who is a sophomore transfer with 7-something. You've got to find that consistency. We haven't done it. Maybe it will happen in Cleveland. I don't know, because it's been kind of a crapshoot. It's been Geno, and then take your pick of another 4 or 5 different individuals who maybe on a given night are going to get you into double digits, and maybe you've got 3 guys, maybe even 4 guys in double digits, but the next time out, it's always somebody else. So, you know, it's kind of like shooting in the dark. You just never know who's going to pop into the limelight at any given moment. But somebody has to, because Geno just can't do it alone.
Well, if the Falcons and Huskies are to meet in this year's MAC tournament, it would be on Saturday in the championship game, as they are on opposite sides of the draw. The Huskies play Miami Thursday at 2:30 in a quarterfinal matchup. Then they'll get the winner of Akron and Ohio. Bill Baker, the voice of the Huskies, we appreciate you giving us your time. We'll see you in Cleveland.
Absolutely, Todd. Take care.
We continue our Mid-American Conference Tournament preview on the Bowling Green side of the bracket now. It's Ball State and Kent State, that game at 9 o'clock on Thursday after the Falcons and Rockets. And here to talk Ball State hoops with us is David Eha from their broadcast team. David, good to have you with us.
Hey, good to be with you, Todd.
Now the Cardinals secured the 3 seed for the tournament, and as such they earned a bye, as did Bowling Green for being the 2 seed. And it's been a little while since we saw Ball State. The Falcons swept the season series from them with a win at Stroh Center back on February 15th. Since then, some mixed results from the Cardinals, but a resounding win at Northern Illinois to end the season. So I'm guessing they're feeling pretty good about things right now.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, that was a big win. I would say probably their most complete game of the MAC season, and there was a lot at stake. I mean, Cardinals needed that win on the road to earn that bye to the third seed, and when they needed to come up big, they certainly did. So Cards have won 4 of the last 5, so I would tell you trending in the right direction.
And when you look at this Ball State team, I think everybody starts with Tajay Teague, and he certainly came up big in that Northern game with 18 and 11 plus 4 assists. But outside of him, it seems that other guys haven't been quite as consistent. But has somebody maybe solidified themselves of late being a more consistent producer?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, particularly since, you know, we saw you guys last, is the play of our bench. We've had a couple guys, one guy in particular, Myron Thomas, who barely played, I think, against you guys, maybe 7 minutes in the last game, just sparingly throughout MAC season, had several DNPs, and he's a 6'8 sophomore. He transferred in from Maryland Eastern Shore, where he was all freshmen in that league, and he's a guy now that is not only playing, but he's contributing. Against Northern Illinois, he had 14 points and 5 rebounds, and so the bench play, the last 2 games, they've scored 26 and 27 points respectively. So I think probably the biggest change since we last saw the Falcons has really been the fact that we've had guys coming in. You're right, a lot of the other starters haven't been consistent, but the bench has really been a huge lift for the Cardinals.
Yeah, Thomas, the last 2 games, a total 23 points and 13 boards, and that's the kind of thing you need off the bench if you're going to get wins. And now you look at this matchup with Kent State. The Flashes, of course, beat Bowling Green late in the season and then had a narrow loss against Akron in the wrap-up before winning their home game the other night to advance. Now, the Cardinals and Flashes played only once. Ball State won that game at Kent. What do you think about this matchup in particular for the Cardinals?
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to that win at Kent, Cardinals won that game by 8 points, 62-54, and it was, the stats were kind of crazy. Kent in that game was just 1 of 20 from 3-point range. And so I think the biggest thing about this matchup that, you know, kind of scares you is Kent is a team laden with upperclassmen. And so, you know, anytime, particularly in a tournament setting, you know, you tend to favor teams that have some experience and that have been there. So it's going to be a difficult matchup. But I think, you know, and you mentioned it earlier, for Ball State, it really starts and ends with Tajay Teague. If Teague can stay out of foul trouble and get 30-plus minutes, he can really be a difference maker. I mean, in that first game against Kent, he had 12 points, 17 rebounds, and 6 assists. So, you know, he was clearly a handful. He played 36 minutes, which is a key. Now, if he picks up 3 fouls early on, you know, it's going to be a totally different story. So, you know, it's going to be, I think it's going to be a competitive game. And, you know, Kent and right there in their backyard certainly should have some of the home crowd in their favor. So, should be interesting.
Yeah, I think when I look at this Ball State team, the other guy that jumps out at me that can be a guy that can make a big impact in a game is El Amin. He's got the ability to put up a ton of points, I think. Is he a guy that you've seen go off occasionally?
Yeah, he really is. And he has stepped up, you know, at both ends of the floor. I think the key for the Cardinals is they are going to play defense. Now, if you're a Bowling Green fan, you look back and say, well, wait a minute, Justin Turner had 33 points. You got to give Turner credit in that game. He was phenomenal. But aside from that, honestly, the defense that the Cardinals have been playing has been stifling. And so I think the key for them, if they can make shots, particularly threes, because they shoot such a high number, if they can make 8 to 12 threes, they're going to be a difficult matchup. And that's why El Amin is a guy that if he's hitting from distance, which he's certainly capable, then that opens things up on the inside for Teague. So, you know, if the Cardinals are going to make a lot of threes, El Amin is going to be a guy that has to be a part of that mix, no question.
Well, it's Ball State and Kent State Thursday night at 9, just after Bowling Green and Toledo, and certainly a possible BG matchup in the semifinals on Friday night. David Eha with the Ball State broadcast crew, we appreciate you taking time with us.
All right. Thanks, Todd. We'll see you in Cleveland.
Time now to look at the matchup with Ball State. That would be the Kent State Golden Flashes. They come in after beating Eastern Michigan 86-76 on Monday night, and they move into the quarterfinals. And here to talk about that with us is the voice of the Flashes, Ty Linder. Ty, how are you?
It's great to be with you. I'm doing fine. I'm happy it's March at the MAC tournament. Should be fun, wide open. Some good ball clubs coming in there on the men and women's side. Should be a fun week.
Well, for Kent State, sort of a schizophrenic ending to the season. I mean, they had that shootout loss to Buffalo and then a loss to Ohio. But you mix in the win over Bowling Green, a pretty sizable win over Miami, the tough loss to Akron, and now they handle Eastern. So kind of hard to get a grip on this team, but try and do that for us. How are they playing down the stretch?
Yeah, you know what, Todd? About a month to go in the year, they started to turn things around and play a little bit more consistently. They mentioned, or as you mentioned, they had some tough losses in there, but really played hard, played well. The one game, I think, that Rob Senderoff would tell you was kind of the outlier was the game at Eastern Michigan, and as you mentioned, they kind of got even with the Eagles last night in the tournament game. But playing well, they had 21 assists in the game last night. They did have 18 turnovers, which is a high number, but I think that's probably due to the zone defense that they just haven't been able to quite handle this year for whatever reason. So, but 21 assists, that's a season high, good number. Good offensive game last night. Danny Pippen had 20. 20-9. So, yeah, I mean, over the last month or so, this has become a fun team to watch. Yeah, they've lost a couple of games at OU, at Zips. They had the double overtime loss to Buffalo, as you mentioned. But all in all, I think this is as talented a team as any going to Cleveland. But the question is, can you corral that, and can you play like that for the next three games?
Well, when you look at their matchup with Ball State, the teams only met once during the season. It was a low-scoring affair, a Cardinals win at Kent. What do you remember from that game that figures to be a part of the strategy for this game?
I remember two things. I remember, number one, that it was the classic trap game after a home win over the Zips. They beat UA with a last-second shot, a last-second putback, and then defended for the final couple of seconds to get a win at home, 68-67. That was a Friday night in front of about 6,500 people. Then on Tuesday night, you don't get that same crowd. You go 1-for-20 from three-point range against Ball State, and it's just it's never really a game that anybody gets into. So I'm interested to see now, with the season on the line for both teams, how this game goes. Ball State's a very, very good defensive team. I just don't see Kent State going 1-for-20 from three-point range again, and you're also not coming off an emotional win against a rival. So those two things, the timing of the game, and number two, I just don't see Kent missing 19 out of 20 three-pointers again.
Well, when you look at the specific matchup, then what do you like about it for Kent State, and what do you not like about it?
Well, I don't like how good Tajay Teague is defensively. I think that's going to be a challenge for guys like Danny Pippen and Phil Whittington. That I'm sure is going to keep the Kent State coaching staff up for the next couple of nights in trying to figure out how to neutralize his defensive game plan. What I do like is it seems like Kent State usually plays well in the quarterfinals at the MAC tournament. Obviously, the past games don't have any indication on what's going to happen on Thursday night, but you're in that late slot. The Golden Flashes should be well rested. They played Friday, they played Monday, and now you're not playing until Thursday night. And Ball State's been off, or will have been off, since Friday. So I like the timing. I think Kent State's playing well coming into the game. I think that, guys like Antonio Williams and Danny Pippen are playing the best they have all year coming into this game. So that's more than one reason for a Kent State fan to be optimistic.
All right, Ty, if it's going well, we see Kent State. What do we see? And then conversely, when it's not going well, what do we see from there?
If Ball State's going to the line 20, 25, 30 times, that's not a recipe for Kent State to be successful. If Kent State can keep the Cardinals off the line, keep them, maybe 10, 15 trips to the free throw line, that's a good sign for the Golden Flashes. Anything more than that, I think they're in for a dogfight. But they've struggled this year to defend without fouling in a large number of their games. I think they gave up 30 free throws on Friday night. So that's been a problem pretty much all year. If they've got a high number of assists, Kent State does, and not as many turnovers, I think that means they're moving the ball well. I think that the players are buying into that game's plan, and I think that's also a good early sign. This is also a team that appears to me that needs to hit some shots early on just to get some confidence. They have some shots go in and out, or they don't fall. They tend to get back on their heels a little bit. So some early shots in a bigger arena, I think, bodes well.
All right, Ty, good to talk with you, and could be Bowling Green Kent State again in the semifinals. We'll have to wait and see how that turns out, but we appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Should be fun.
Hope you enjoyed a little quick tour around the Mid-American Conference tournament matchups for tomorrow. And, of course, BG will be playing at 6:30 tomorrow night, taking on the Toledo Rockets. We'll be on the air at 6 with our Medical Mutual pregame show. And, of course, now we will be accompanied by fewer than 500 people, thanks to the attendance restrictions. It's going to be sort of Twilight Zone-ish, that's for sure. We wrap up this week's Ziggy Cast Talking Hockey. BGSU swept 2 at Alaska to move into the WCHA Best of 3 semifinals now at Bemidji State Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday if necessary. The hockey voice of the Falcons, Ryan Vallon, joins us. Ryan, what was the key to the sweep?
You know, I think it was just the you know, the camaraderie of the guys, you know, going on the road, being on the road for an extended period of time, and also getting back up to Alaska and playing a familiar opponent. And I think having Max Johnson as an X factor was huge. I mean, he scored a crucial goal in that game two series. And I think it's just playing with confidence, you know, like, you know, you and I have talked about, you know, the month of January was not at all confident for the Falcons. So to now play with some confidence and go up there and ride a 4-game winning streak and now extend it to 6 games, that is, you know, really big for this program right now.
Well, you know, for this BGSU hockey team, maybe in a weird way, the pressure was off moving into the playoffs, and, you know, now they can reset the season, refresh themselves, and start anew. Is that maybe part of what happened here?
In a way, yeah. I think, you know, because people always say that, you know, that the playoffs is the second season, and, you know, I think the coaching staff has done a really good job of telling the players that, hey, you know, we can't go back and, you know, do over January. We can't go over and, you know, take a point here or there. You know, we have to, you know, move on. And I think that has happened here. And, you know, I don't know if the pressure is necessarily off, but like I said earlier, I think having the confidence to win, I think, takes the pressure off at least a little bit. You know, knowing that, you know, you're playing more comfortable with the lead. You know, I was talking to, you know, freshman TJ Lloyd, and he was saying that, you know, they're becoming more confident and comfortable playing with the lead, whereas back in January, it wasn't that way. I mean, when they had the lead, it was almost predictable that they would give it up. But now here we're sitting in March, the middle of March, and when the team has a lead, yeah, the other team is going to make a push, but you can expect that Bowling Green will at least bend but not break.
Ryan, other than the mental side of things, what went well for the Falcons X and O-wise on the ice to get the sweep of Alaska?
I think being better sound defensively was crucial. One thing I did notice, Todd, was on the Saturday night game, the two goals that Eric Gobb let up were not, you know, first chances. They were secondary, third chances, fourth chances. It was a shot that Gobb had saved, or it was blocked. And then just the ensuing scrum that happened, you know, that's where the pucks somehow got to trickle in. So I think being better sound defensively as a whole, I think, contributed to the success. And then also offensively, you know, the power play was clicking on Friday. Not so much Saturday. They played well on the power play on Saturday. Just unfortunately, they go 0-for-6. You know, sometimes you just play well on the power play, but ultimately, nothing hits the back of the net. The penalty kill was pretty good also throughout as well. So I think from an X's and O's standpoint, you know, just, you know, the special teams were clicking, better defensive play in your own end, and also getting on the score sheet as well.
So now the Falcons take on the second-seeded Bemidji Beavers. Is this the type of season we were expecting from Bemidji, to be kind of up there with Minnesota State in the WCHA standings?
You know, I don't think a lot of people, you know, had Bemidji as the number two seed in the WCHA. I think people had them a little bit lower, myself included. And even throughout their season, I mean, they were playing the bottom feeders of the WCHA in college hockey, and they were winning. And I think a lot of people said, well, is Bemidji State for real? And until the second half of the season, that's when they played Minnesota State twice. They played Bowling Green. They played Northern Michigan. They played Michigan Tech. They had those crucial series. And, you know, Bemidji State did really well with those series. They swept Bowling Green. They swept Northern Michigan. I think they split with Michigan Tech. And, you know, and obviously they split with Minnesota State. So, you know, twice, might I add. So, you know, I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's necessarily surprising that they are what they are. You know, head coach Tom Ceratori has always done a tremendous job. This is his 19th season behind the bench for Bemidji. But, you know, in terms of the talent level around the WCHA, I guess you could call it a little bit surprising that they're number two, but not out of the ordinary.
All right, Ryan, what do the Falcons have to do to get a win in this series with Bemidji? Give me some of the keys to victory here.
Well, first of all, the thing that the Falcons have to do is they have to solve Zach Driscoll. Zach Driscoll is probably the number two goaltender in the country. And Bemidji State, they don't take a whole lot of penalties. So when you get power plays, you have to score on them. It's very crucial because they, like I said, they don't give so many power plays. And I, from what I can remember, the last series that the Falcons played against them in February, in January, February, you know, there weren't a whole lot of power plays to go around. So I think, you know, being crucial on the power play and also being crucial on the penalty kill as well. And Bemidji State is a defensive team. So being able to, you know, cut through the mud in the middle of the ice to get through into the offensive zone setup, get a shot, get a rebound, and try to see if you can go for scoring chances is going to be crucial. But I would probably have to point to, like I said, you know, the goaltending with Zach Driscoll. Adam Brady, I believe, is their leading goal scorer as well. He's your senior captain, so you're going to have to shut him down on the defensive side of things. And then also just, you know, converting on the power play if you do get those opportunities.
Final thing, Ryan, I would think some folks might be surprised that the hockey team never came back from Fairbanks after sweeping that series. They spent another day there and then didn't come back to Bowling Green. Instead, they went to Minnesota right away on Tuesday. Take me through what's been going on here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the team knew that, you know, if they were to win the first series against Alaska, that there would be a really good chance that they would be playing a school in Minnesota, whether it be Minnesota State or Bemidji State. So the team had already put in advance that the team was going to fly into Minneapolis, St. Paul, right here on Tuesday morning. So, you know, the team decided that instead of, it doesn't make sense to go all the way from Fairbanks, Alaska, back to Bowling Green, Ohio, then have less than 24 hours to, you know, pack everything up again and then get on a plane or a bus and then go out to Bemidji. It just didn't make sense. It just made sense to go, you know, back from Fairbanks to Minneapolis. The team is practicing at St. Thomas Academy. Head coach Ty Eckner's brother is the coach here at St. Thomas, so he's letting us use the ice, you know, go to the Mall of America, do some fun things, and then after that, get on a bus, go up to Bemidji, and hope to win two games. So it's been almost 2 weeks on the road, but you know, the team, the vibe around the team is they're happy, they're ready to play. They feel that they play better on the road, and they can't wait to get this series going with Bemidji this weekend.
Big thanks to Ryan. Good luck to the BGSU hockey team at Bemidji this weekend. And, of course, BGSU men's basketball will be in action Thursday night, taking on Toledo in the MAC tournament. 6:30 is tip time from Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse in Cleveland. Hope you'll join us next week. Hope we have a podcast next week, because if we do, that means BG is in the NCAA tournament. So hopefully we'll talk to you next week here on the Ziggy Cast. Until then, this is Todd Walker saying, aye, Ziggy Zumba.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.